This is John Jackson Miller.
Hey, superhero fans. This is John Wesley Shipp. Barry Allen from the original Flash TV series and Henry Allen and Jay Garrick from the CW Flash series.
Hey, comic book fans. Lauren Lester here, the voice of many of your favorite superheroes like Green Lantern, Iron Fist, and of course, Robin and Nightwing.
Hey, comic book fans, this is Diane Pershing. You've heard me as Poison Ivy on Batman, Dale Arden on Flash Gordon, and many other animated series. And now you're hearing me on Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Welcome, superhero and pop culture fans. This is Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life, the world's first podcast devoted exclusively to in-depth interviews with the talented folks who bring comics to life in film, television, animation, video games, podcasts, and beyond. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, on the road yet again. Yeah, that's right. Bringing you back-to-back series featuring my travels to a couple of amazing comics and pop culture conventions right here in my home state of Ohio. Hope you caught my three-part series from the Cincinnati Comic Expo. Tons of super guests on that adventure. Today, I'm kicking off an equally epic event, my three-part look back at GalaxyCon Columbus. Yeah, a little bit closer to the lair this one is. Now, over the next three episodes, you're going to hear from some of the terrifically talented folks who attended GalaxyCon Columbus recently. As usual, I'm there walking the floor, asking the questions, trying to bring some of that back to you here on Comic Book Central for all you listeners out there. My thanks to the folks behind the event who put on a great show each and every year and for always making Comic Book Central feel welcome. And if you want to get on the fun for this year's event, GalaxyCon Columbus will be taking place December 4th through the 6th, 2026. Or if you want to see if GalaxyCon is going to be in your neighborhood, they do have quite a few events around the country. I think there's 15 or so in comics, animation, horror categories. GalaxyCon.com is where you want to go for all the ticket information, the location information, guest information. Everything's there. By the way, if you're looking at Columbus for this December, the guest list for Columbus is already taking shape. So head to GalaxyCon.com, make your plans, get your tickets, and I hope to see you there. All right, today I am kicking things off with some chat about two of my favorite superheroes of all time, The Flash and the Dark Knight himself, Batman. First up, the fastest man alive, The Flash. What better way to start than with the OG Flash, the man who brought the Scarlet Speedster to life in the 1990 television series as Barry Allen, and then he continued to bring numerous characters to life in the 2014 series, including the Jay Garrick version of The Flash. I got to meet up yet again with the great John Wesley Shipp. As I always say, conventions go next level when the ship comes in. Now, you longtime listeners know this is not the first time John has joined me for a chat. The first time was all the way back on episode 96. That was in 2015 for an in-depth interview. We talked all about his career, The Flash, a bunch of different things. Since then, numerous meetups at Comic Cons and multiple Q&A sessions at Terrificon. This past summer at Terrificon, John even let me wear the Jay Garrick helmet during the Q&A. Dream come true for me. Always great to meet up with him. Now, this interview at GalaxyCon, I want to say, was recorded back in December. As many of you know, John was a cast member on the television series Dawson's Creek alongside James Vanderbeek. We unfortunately lost James to cancer on February 11th. Incredible talent, great man. He is so missed. So when I spoke to John back in December, he told me about an incredible event that was held just a few months before that reunited the Dawson's Creek family for a one-night-only charity event to raise money for the nonprofit F Cancer. By the way, I am going to put a link to that nonprofit in the show notes for this episode on my website, comicbookcentral.net. So if you want to donate to that organization in the battle against cancer, that'll be there. John mentioned what an amazing event that was, what an amazing night. Here to talk about it is the great John Wesley Shipp.
The return of the fastest man alive. And as I mentioned on our most recent episode,
the guest who has made the most appearances on Comic Book Central. You are official.
Am I really?
You easily, by far.
Oh, yes, my God.
I think it's like 8 or 9 at this point. You can't even count.
That is quite an honor.
Here's the thing. I'm always coming at you with questions. Is there anything you'd like to talk about? Like, what do you want to talk about?
Flash-related?
Anything.
It just amazes me how much resonance even the 1990 show still has. You know, being here today on a Friday, how many people have come up, both for the what they call the OG Flash and for the new Flash. And the fact that I've played 4 characters on 5 different shows on 3 different networks across 35 years in one franchise, you know, it's nothing I ever expected.
Yeah.
And it has it's just been an honor, and it's an honor being a part of a legacy in families. Fathers who watched the old show with their sons, and now the sons are watching the new show with their sons. And I get to be the thread that runs through that. It's amazing to me.
Yeah. Last time we met up at Terrificon, so we ran a Q&A. Might have been my favorite Q&A of ours of all time. Man, it was one of the best ones. What have you been up to since? And I think, did you reunite with some Dawson's Creek folks?
Did.
Or what? I mean, can you tell us about that?
Yes, we did. We had a fabulous event at the Richard Rogers Theater on Broadway. We did a benefit for F Cancer, and the entire original cast got together, with the exception of James, who couldn't be there. He made an appearance via video.
Oh, okay. How did that go over? I mean, the fans must have been...
Fans went crazy. And yeah. Steven Spielberg did a video appearance.
Oh.
And Lin-Manuel Miranda filled in for James and read the part of Dawson on the stage of Hamilton, which was so cool. He was so cool.
When did you know he was going to do that?
I found out like a day or two before. And my family went wild because they're huge Hamilton.
Did they all want tickets then for the event at the last second?
You know, they were gone in 12 minutes.
Whoa.
We put them on sale and it sold out in 12 minutes.
And the money was raised. What a cause.
The money was raised, and we took pictures with people who came. It was absolutely electric. We did a sing-along with the audience of the theme song. I don't want to wait, you know.
Unbelievable event.
It was the electricity in the hall in the Richard Rogers Theater that night would have blown the roof off. If anyone had lit a match, the roof would have blown off.
You have had a busy year, my friend. I mean, this has got to be one of the best years. What are any fan experiences that just resonate with you, or just is it just the whole year as a whole?
It's just the whole year as a whole.
Yeah.
You know, I was able to do the Kane Mutiny court-martial at a regional theater.
That was amazing.
And since then, I've been nominated, David Gregory, in supporting actor, and me as lead actor, for the Broadway World Raleigh Awards.
Congratulations. What else is right around the corner? What do you got next?
I just did a movie called Scallop Season. It's a short film that we shot in Clearwater. And that's I just got the edited version of that, which I haven't seen yet. But that'll be making the rounds of short film festivals.
Nice.
And they'll be raising money to then shoot the full feature. But it's really a good script and fine people to work with.
And most likely coming to a convention near you. You're everywhere. You are the fastest man alive. The Comic Book Central legend, John, it is always nice to catch up with you. Thanks for being in my backyard of Columbus. It's a little closer for me now.
Well, Joe, I'll never forget the first time we did a Q&A together at Terrificon.
Yeah.
And I use your voice, you know that, in my promos for like every convention. The one, the only.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, John. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, John is one of the all-time greats. If you've seen any of the videos of that Dawson's event, you know what a special night that was. So much more poignant now. Again, the link to donate to the charity is in the show notes for this episode. And you know what? As of this recording, I looked and Dawson's Creek is streaming on Hulu. I think as soon as I wrap here today, I'm going to go binge watch. I recommend you do it as well. What a time to go back and watch Dawson's Creek. And be sure to keep up with John and his website, johnwesleyship.com. I'm going to put that link into the show notes for this episode at my website as well. John's got a bunch of appearances coming up. He's speeding all around the world. Make sure you catch up with him somewhere. All right, going from the Scarlet Speedster to the Dark Knight, time for some Bat Chat. If you caught my last episode of Comic Book Central, you heard my conversations with three of the Bat-tastic talents who worked on Batman the Animated Series, producers Stan Berkowitz and Alan Burnett, and director Dan Reba. Now, at GalaxyCon Columbus, I got to meet up with two terrific actors who brought the iconic characters Robin and Poison Ivy to life on Batman the Animated Series, Lauren Lester and Diane Pershing. You longtime listeners know that both have been to the Lair before for in-depth interviews all about their careers. Diane dropped by the Lair on episode 175. Lauren joined me back on episode 185. Always love when I get a chance to meet up with these greats in person and catch up with them on what they've been doing since we last spoke. First up, Lauren Lester talks about his recent Broadway debut in Cabaret.
All right, since your work on Batman the Animated Series, you've done stage, you've done live action, you've done animation projects. What's a recent performance that challenged you, would you say, in a completely new way? Because you've been in the business for quite a while now.
I would say that doing 8 shows a week on Broadway was very challenging.
Wow.
So it takes its physical toll, you know, because particularly in the old theaters in New York, people don't realize it, but there's a lot of stairs, and you up and down these flights of stairs over and over and over again, especially for 2 shows a day, you sometimes do maybe 1,500 stairs.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty intensive.
How difficult is that, too, when you're doing that many shows? Not only just remember your lines, but then things happen live. I mean, people have cell phones that go off, people do... Do they yell out anything during the show, or something? Like, what surprises you the most about that?
Well, that's what's really exciting about live theater, is that you never know what's going to happen. As far as learning our lines, that happens a long time before we ever get in front of an audience. So once we're in front of an audience, what happens out there, and believe me, anything can happen out there, and things can go wrong. Sometimes they have to stop the show to fix something that's broken or something. So it's a thrill. It's a thrill for the audience, too. When something happens technically and they have to stop the show, people usually applaud and... They're thrilled that, you know, they got to see something different like that, you know.
Voice acting has changed so much now with streaming. There's AI, there's video games, there's all kinds of new technology. How have you adapted your process over the years, going back to when you first started to just even the most recent?
Well, I really miss when we used to be all in the same room together.
Like a radio play.
It was like a radio play. We were all there. There was almost never someone who was absent from the... Now... Even if you go to a studio and there's more than one character, a lot of times that person isn't there because maybe they're a very big celebrity and they're off doing something else and they're going to do their part later. So I really miss that.
You've worked with a lot of legendary voice actors over the years. Is there somebody recent that you've worked with that you were like, oh my goodness, how has it taken me this long to work with this person? Or somebody that excited you just recently on projects?
Well, I love doing Comic-Cons because this is where I see all of my idols. So it's fantastic. I love
Do you fanboy out?
Oh, I fanboy out big time.
Who did you fanboy out at the most at a comic convention? And well, do you get autographs? Do you get people's autographs?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I worked with William Shatner. I did his show Boston Legal many years ago. So I got to work with him as an actor. Yeah. But then I've seen him over the years at the different conventions, and I love shooting the breeze with him, especially about the theater. He's a big theater man.
Yeah. Did you get to ask him for his autograph, or like who did?
Not from him. I didn't feel comfortable.
Okay.
Asking for his autograph.
Who's your?
But I took a picture with him.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
And I took a picture with Nichelle Nichols and with Walter Koenig and all the
legends.
Yeah, all the legends of Star Trek.
Because growing up for you, that was your fanboy Star Trek.
Oh, absolutely, the original series for sure.
For fans who know you primarily as Robin on the voiceover, what's a recent creative venture that you want them to discover? Maybe something that didn't get the kind of attention that Batman and Robin got, but maybe you want them to go back now and go, hey, can you check this out? Or maybe it's streaming.
Well, what's crazy is that people come up here at Comic-Cons to get my autograph, and then they'll say, oh, I just saw you on Gilmore Girls, or oh, I just saw you on I just saw you on this or that. So I think it's all out there, and it's all kind of running.
What keeps you creatively challenged, even now, after all these years of doing this?
It's really hard to find great scripts. You know, we had such great scripts on our show, and as an actor, that's how I inform my performances, comes from the words. And if the words aren't there, or you have to really fill in for the writing that isn't really as good, you have to kind of improv, which is fine. I like to improv too. But finding great scripts is really hard these days.
What's next for you?
I'm in New York, and I'm a theater actor primarily now. So I have just done a number of theater workshops for shows, brand new shows that are hopefully going to go into full production. I just did one that was really brilliant about Australian wrestlers. It was a musical comedy. It was very, very funny. So hoping that is going to see a next production.
Lauren, have a great weekend here in Columbus. Thank you so much for coming back to Comic Book Central and joining me again.
Well, thanks for the interviews. Appreciate it.
You can keep up with everything that Lauren's got going on at his website, laurenlester.com. Now, one of the best parts of attending conventions like GalaxyCon is that the legends are everywhere. And just steps away from Robin, another iconic talent from Batman the Animated Series, here's my conversation with Poison Ivy herself, Diane Pershing.
Welcome back to Comic Book Central. Thank you. Welcome to Columbus.
Well, my yes.
How? I'm sorry it's December, and I'm sorry it's cold. I know, but what are we going to do about it?
Well, there's nothing we can do about it, but the bottom line is I wish I could have come in better weather and stayed an extra day and seen some of the city.
There's a lot. And if you're a foodie, this is a foodie town. I will say that.
I love food, so yes.
You have to come back when it's a little warmer. Since we last spoke, you've continued to voice characters, write and perform. Which recent project would you say gave you the most unexpected creative satisfaction and why?
No, I really am not doing very much voice work anymore at all, really.
How is that possible?
Because basically when I moved from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C. 4 years ago to be with my family, I got out of the L.A. thing. I have an apartment that I cannot have a studio in. It's just impossible, etc. And it became so difficult to even audition that I thought, you know what, Diane, you've done this 50 years. let's move over and let the younger people do it. It's fine.
Is that okay? Because a lot has changed over the years in voice acting. And there's AI, there's all this different technology. Have you seen that, or have you heard from your fellow voice actors? Like, it is so much different now. You have no idea.
Well, it's so much different now because the entire country, including the world, can audition.
Yes.
For things. So there's no more, 10 people are going to audition and that's it. No. The entire world can audition for anything.
If you could step back into Poison Ivy's shoes just for one modern animated project, if you were to get back into work or they were to give you a call, how would you update her voice or her persona for today's audience? Or would you change anything?
No, I would change nothing. The voice that I heard in my head when I auditioned, and I got it right there on the spot, because the other person that was going to be Poison Ivy, the producers didn't feel that she was quite right, and Andrea Romano gave me the sell of the character and said, want to audition? I said, yeah, and I did, and I got the job because that voice I heard in my head was the right voice. Why would I change that?
Yeah. You got to work as a cast, as an ensemble, like kind of like a radio play back in the day. Was there, and there were so many actors that came in, so many legendary actors. Can you recall somebody that you were like, oh my goodness, I can't believe who's in the studio today?
Well, the thing is that I was recording next to Mark Hamill. I mean, come on. And then there were other various people. I've never been particularly starstruck, though.
Yeah.
we're fellow actors.
You've always had a multifaceted career from writing, stage, voice acting, just about everything. Was there one medium that you liked the most or that you look forward to the most or that challenged you creatively the most?
I would say that every 20 years or so I got challenged by a different thing. And originally I was absolutely theater girl. That was my stage, and I was wonderful, and I loved it. And I don't mean that I was wonderful. Of course, I was very good. But, I was musical comedy and straight and Shakespeare and all that stuff. And then when I got into the voices, I really liked doing that. It was a different kind of craft, and I enjoyed that also. And then later on, I got into writing, as you know. And I still write every day. I don't write to publish anymore. I just write because I like to express myself.
Is there a lesson you've learned from writing or that you've written down in the books that you want to go back in time and tell your younger self, younger Diane, that you wish you could give her that advice right now?
You know, I personally have no regrets about anything in my life. I'm one of those people that thinks that whatever happened at the time was the way it was supposed to be.
That's fair.
And that's just, that's, nah.
No do-overs?
Nah. No, because
that's healthy. That's a healthy attitude.
Well, I do think of all the decisions I made that I look back and say, wow, that was brave, or that was a little stupid, or whatever, and I go, but it led me to today.
Yeah. It's the person you are today.
The person I am today, and I'm quite contented with my life.
That's a very healthy attitude to have. Is there a line that Poison Ivy said the fans quote back to you more than any?
They can bury us as deep as they want, but we grow back. We always grow back, don't we, baby?
That's great. Is there a fan experience that you... that sticks out because you're doing, I think you've transitioned, like you said, from the acting thing into this experience now of meeting the fans, finding out what your work meant to them. Is there a memorable fan experience that you can recall that still stays with you to this day?
To this day, it was the young lady who came up with tears streaming down her face, telling me that she had been abused as a child and didn't know there was any by her father. And she didn't know there was any other way to be because that's what her family was. And when she saw Poison Ivy interact with Harley Quinn and saying, you do not let a man run you and tell you what to do. He's not in charge of you. She said it opened up the world for her. And both of us were sitting there crying.
Diane, you are fantastic as always. We love these experiences. And you do touch so many lives. And I'm glad that you're able to enjoy that now on a different level.
Well, thank you so much for coming back and saying hi again.
Yes, yeah. Thank you for coming back to Comic Book Central. You're always welcome. You always have an episode.
Thank you so much.
All right, if you want to know where Diane's going to be showing up next, hey, might be alongside Lauren again. You never know. The Batcast does love showing up everywhere. If you want to find out where she's going to be, the place you want to be is her website, DianePershing.com. All right, from the stylized shadows of Batman the Animated Series to the gothic world that inspired it, Tim Burton's Gotham City. When the movie Batman burst onto screens in 1989, it didn't just revive the Caped Crusader. It reshaped the entire pop culture landscape, creating a cinematic universe that fans still return to decades later. Author John Jackson Miller stepped back into that Burtonverse to expand the story with his 2024 novel, Batman Resurrection, exploring the aftermath of the Joker's Reign of Chaos. I previously caught up with John at GalaxyCon. That's back on episode 486. We talked about that book, and we previewed the next chapter in this saga. That next chapter has now arrived. It's Batman Revolution, which is also set between the continuity of the films Batman and Batman Returns. I got to catch up with John at GalaxyCon to discuss his latest Batman novel.
Fantastic job on the book once again. I love that we get to keep talking about Batman. Please tell me you've changed your mind. There's going to be a third one. Please, please, please.
Tim Burton did two. We did two.
I know.
The idea had always been one duology project here. It is 950 pages across two books.
It's a lot.
So the second book is already a book and a half. I am still working. I am in a project right now. My passport is still stamped for the DC Universe.
Okay.
I cannot say what I'm working on.
Those are our favorite projects, the ones you can't talk about yet.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
When you set out to write Revolution, what was the single thematic idea or emotional undercurrent you wanted to explore that was different from Resurrection?
Well, I wanted somebody who was as smart as Bruce Wayne was. I wanted somebody who could match wits with him. I also wanted to have a Prince and the Pauper kind of a story, kind of thing going on. This contrast between someone who has gotten more breaks than the other, but they also are both tragic figures. They both have tragic histories. And so I thought, sort of this mirror image of Riddler and Batman would be something we haven't seen before.
Okay.
And I also made sure that I included a villain in this book. I'm not going to say who, but because we always keep our side character's secret.
Yeah.
I included a villain in there that had a technological edge, because none of the villains in the Batman movies by Tim Burton, you know, with the exception of the Joker with his magic bullet, have a real technological edge.
That's right.
Are superior to Batman. And so that was something that we got to mess with, too.
In this book, you reintroduce a version of the Riddler. We talked about that. So instead of using the more familiar incarnations that have happened before, what drew you to that origin that you use, and how do you balance honoring the character's legacy with the reimagining him for the Burtonverse?
Well, I thought that it was a character that's very difficult to write under normal circumstances if you're just trying to echo what's been done before. The whole idea of, well, I'm going to ask a riddle of Batman, and if he solves it, he gets to catch me. Or I'm going to ask a riddle of Batman, and it's really a trap.
Yeah.
Well, it seemed to me like Bruce Wayne, as depicted in the Burton movies, is too smart for that. And what I wanted to do was something where I wanted to have them both tackling mysteries at the same time from different directions. I wanted them also to to be a situation where Bruce solving the same mystery that the Riddler did, except it taking a lot longer, would give him what he needed to find his way to the solution. The notion that this is a Riddler who, somebody who is making puzzles for the newspaper is somebody who is not intending for people to never get the answers. He's always having to think about, have I made this too difficult for people? And what's he trying to do? He's trying to lead people to action. And, he's doing this for entertainment. And definitely he does that. He leads people to action in an entertaining fashion in this book.
Which character surprised you the most when you were writing Revolution? The one who stole maybe a little bit more page time than you expected going in?
I will say, we have Selina Kyle, who is in both books, but I was never expecting to have her in quite so much of this book.
Okay.
And I realized that, as long as she didn't meet Bruce Wayne, she could definitely, a character that could interact with everybody else. In a way that allows me to, not do a sequel to Batman Returns, but a prequel to Batman Returns. And that's how this works.
What's the most Burton-esque scene you wrote for the new book, and the moment where you thought, yeah, Tim Burton would shoot this?
The Riddler's scene where everything goes wrong for him, the day where everything goes wrong, and one thing after another. Where he takes a book to a bat. I could definitely see that happening. Again, all of his villains are broken in some way, shape, or form. Tragic, but also comic in some way, shape, or form. There's a double date scene in this book, which I would pay money to see in live action or in cartoon form.
If you could slip one other Batman villain into the Burtonverse for a cameo, who would it be and why?
I was really careful not to bring characters in as cameos because we might need them again someday.
That's
one of the challenges of writing in a kind of a shared universe, because we had a number of characters show up as cameos or like that in the comics, and I needed to negotiate that. I will say there are some deep pulls in this book. Where there are characters that never you might have only seen them in the in the 1966 show.
Okay.
So there you go.
Did we say Egghead popping up somewhere?
You never know.
What do you hope readers get take away from this book? We see people lining up to buy the books here. When they read this, what do you want them to take away from it? What would you tell them?
I want them to feel like these books were planned. I want them to feel like these books came out in 1990 and 1991, in between those two movies, and I want them to feel like this fits, this meshes with their experience, and that this is true to the experience, and that this is you know, every so often when we would announce something, people say, oh, they're trying to cash in. That is absolutely not what we're doing. This is a love letter to these movies.
Well, give us the website. We want to sell some books here. How do we get them? What's the website?
Farawaypress.com is my website. I got an eBay store. Faraway Press is the name of the store. I got a variety of books on there.
Perfect, John. As always, thanks for coming back to Comic Book Central. Fantastic job of these. Can't wait to see what's next.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
As John mentioned, you can check out all of his work at his website, farawaypress.com. Batman, Star Wars, Star Trek, signed copies, so much more. That link is going to be in the show notes for this episode of my website, comicbookcentral.net. In fact, if you just go to the show notes, anything you've heard from today's show is going to be in there. I'll link everything there. I'm also going to throw in links to purchase Batman Resurrection and Batman Revolution. I highly recommend both books. If you love the Tim Burton, Michael Keaton Batman films, you are going to love these stories as well. And as you're reading it, you can almost hear the Danny Elfman music playing in the background. Okay, folks, that is it for part one of my trip to the recent GalaxyCon Columbus. My thanks to John Wesley Shipp, Lauren Lester, Diane Pershing, and John Jackson Miller for taking some time to return to Comic Book Central for a chat. And my thanks to the entire crew at GalaxyCon for making Comic Book Central feel welcome each and every year. GalaxyCon.com. Head there to make your plans for an upcoming show. And look, we're just getting started on this adventure. Two more episodes to go. So many celebrity chats headed your way. You do not want to miss a moment of the fun. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and you won't miss a thing. Until next time, keep safe, keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.